Happy New Year and welcome to The Librarian on Authors on the Air. I'm the librarian host, Tabitha Pope. This is a copyrighted and trademarked podcast owned solely by the Authors on the Air, Global Radio Network, LLC, on the web at authorsontheair.com. Tonight I have historical romance author Amanda Collins, who spent her teen years wishing she'd been born a couple of centuries earlier, preferably in the English countryside. Time travel being what it is, she resigned herself to life with electricity and indoor plumbing and to read a lot of books. An affinity for books led to a graduate's degree in English, followed by another librarianship. She now writes full-time in the coastal Alabama house her mother grew up in, with three cats, a dog, and more books than strictly necessary. And that is the existence of anyone who is a librarian, I'm sorry to say. You can learn more about her and her books on her website, which is right here, and it's mandacollins.com. And let me bring her up on the show. Welcome to the show, Manda.
Thank you so much.
So glad for having you and another fellow librarian. I love having librarians on my show.
I know. I love talking librarian stuff, even though I'm not doing it anymore. It's still my jam.
Well, I'll tell you what, I think once a pirate, always a pirate. Once a librarian, always a librarian. So I don't think you can get rid of
that.
It's part of who you are. So I've said this before probably a couple of times on the show. I still do read, being a public librarian, still do reader's advisory constantly. Well, you know, they say, oh, you like to read? I read this. And I immediately go into my reference mode and do a reference interview and try to dig out of them what else they could possibly read and give them ideas. And I've even been known to, at the bar, write things down on bar napkins for people. And yeah, I've been out of the game for what, 3 years now. So yeah, it's still hard.
Yeah.
Almost 3 years, 2.5 years. It's still part of who I am. And that's just what I am. So yeah, you can never stop.
It's in your DNA.
And you're probably, because you were an academic librarian for a few years, more than me. We were just talking before the show, you said 9 years. It is probably the same with you.
Yeah.
You're probably constantly trying to tell people, well, you can find that here, or you can go here. Or, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You know how you can do that. Yeah. So, yeah,
There's a more efficient way you can do that search.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, my daughter loves that I was a librarian to help her with her all her research and English papers.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
I never knew these skills would come in handy being mom. Yeah.
Yeah.
So you also you have the 2 degrees, the English and the librarianship, but you mm-hmm. also have an affinity for history. And I think that it's really neat in your bio that you're growing up in the house, or that you're living in the house that your mom grew up in, because history, when people are in love with history, it becomes so much a part of your inner being. You know, you're drawn to things with history in them, and that's a really cool thing. Were you always a history buff then?
I sort of was. I think maybe it started when I read Little Women. I think I was in maybe the third grade, and I knew that it was an old book, and I knew that it was set like during the Civil War, so I knew that it was like a different time.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that was like really cool.
Yeah.
And I was also reading Nancy Drew at the same time, and like the Nancy Drews were old too. You know, she had her roadster and, you know, her pumps and her, you know, her little sweater sets. And so,
yeah,
like it was just growing up in the 70s and 80s, it was that time period was appealing because it was like neat and tidy. The 70s were not.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, 70s were crazy and chaotic, and then the 80s were free love and sexual revolution and weirdness. Yeah. So, but that's really, it's funny. That's when technology really took off. And so you're like me, you grew up in the 70s and 80s where you had some, but not as much as these kids, you know. And so we read more.
Yeah.
Imagine more.
Yeah, exactly.
We didn't have history like here's what it looked like right in our face. We had to imagine what history was, you know, what the time
right.
period was like, what the clothes were like, what it was like to not have air conditioning, you know, all those things.
Right. And you, I mean, you had to look it up. Like, you had to physically leave your house and go to the library and, you know, go through a bunch of different books to look at, you know, pictures of what it might have been like. It was different. I did, because of that, like, I spent a lot of time in my imagination and reading. And,
did you write at a young age? Were you a writer early or just a reader?
I never really thought of myself as a writer. But then when I was in the sixth grade, I started writing Moonlighting fanfic that featured me and my little group of friends. Like, and we would have adventures with the cast of Moonlighting, and like, it was the strangest thing, but it was so fun to me. And like, one of the best parts of it was like cackling to myself as I was writing it, imagining how they would respond to it. So I was already in that mode where I wanted to see what readers would think about what it was I was writing.
Right,
but
right.
Even
all
then,
the snide comments.
Like, oh, yeah. Yeah, or, you know, I would, like, put in, like, little side jokes and things like that, you know, or inside jokes. And and it was fun, but I didn't think of it as, like, something that I would ever, like, do.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a little fun thing.
It's funny how people get started with that bug, you know, the little seed that gets started about writing. So embarrassing. I did. I was really into the Black Dagger Brotherhood. That was like my big thing.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
So into the Black Dagger Brotherhood. And back when Facebook first started, they were role playing groups and stuff. So I was like, I want to do this. I love just watching them, you know, interact with each other and telling these stories as they enter. But then, you know, somebody was like, hey, you want to, we have an open part, you want to play? Like, okay, so I played one of the guys, you know, and I was like, this is cool, because I'm like getting into the mind of a guy. And
yeah. Well, who are you?
I was Torment.
Tormented Tor.
Yes, I was. And, you know, it's back before she wrote Son of No One, and you figured out that no one was really,
right,
you know, his dead wife reincarnated. Blah,
right.
Blah, blah. So, you know,
right.
I was going to flirt with her and all this, and I was like, that was my seed. That was my, like, I can actually get into the mind of a character and, you know, feel what they, you know, and put it on the page.
Yeah.
And it was a trip. But it's just funny, everybody's little seed, where they started, where they got the bug. And fanfic, Moonlighting of all things, that's just awesome, because I love that show. I was almost too young to understand it. I mean, you know, the side jokes and whatnot, because I was just right on that.
Yeah.
Cusp. But, and I mean, it was some of the best sarcastic, witty dialogue of a, you know, like a mystery drama type of thing. And
oh, yeah.
Awesome. And it never gets any praise.
You know, it was funny and sexy and drama and mystery. It was everything.
And Bruce Willis was so young.
Yes, and he had hair.
So you went to school, you got, and you're like me, you got degrees, and you decided to write. But what did you sit down and say,
I'm sorry, it cut out.
So at what point did you sit down and say, I'm going to try to book? I'm going to really do this.
Well, it actually came about in 2006. Like, I had, over the years, I had written first chapters of, like, at least 10 books. And I never got past the first chapter. And then in 2006, Avon held a contest called the Avon Fanlit Contest. And basically what they would do was, over the course of, I want to say like 2 months. Once a week, they would give you a prompt, and it was a prompt for a Regency story, and the competitors would write a scene, write a chapter, and then people would come in and vote on it. And I got involved with that with a group of my friends who were involved with the Eloisa James bulletin board. Like, we were all buddies there.
Yeah.
So we all entered Fanlit. And the contest, I finaled in all of the things, but I never, like, won a chapter.
Uh-huh.
Or I finaled, like, 5 times. There were, like, 6 or 7 chapters. But the discipline of writing a chapter a week really showed me that it was possible for me to, like, be disciplined enough to actually write a whole novel. I think before that, like, the idea of writing an entire book just seemed so huge and impossible. Mm-hmm. But when I did that, you know, and at the end of 6 weeks, I had written, like, I think the chapters were like 2,000 words each. So, you know, at the end of 6 weeks, that was like 12,000 words I had written, which is,
right,
you know, a substantial part of a book.
Mm-hmm.
So after that, my friends and I, like, kind of got together and we, like, formed a critique group and we started writing.
That's
and
awesome.
I finished my first book about 6 months later.
Wow.
And I got my agent like 3 months after that.
Wow. That's really awesome. And all because Avon put a contest. Oh, that's great. And they don't, you know, there's not enough of that. I mean, I know that writers' organizations put those on, but used to, like, Red Book would put one on, and Writer's Digest or Reader's Digest had little writing thing. I mean, they have little things, but not, like, full.
Right.
I mean, they used to put, like, a whole short story in them.
Yeah, and this was romance. Like, that's what I think was different about it. Because, like, the other stuff, like, I had, you know, over the year, I had looked at the Reader's Digest. Like, they had the little joke things you could send in, and I thought about doing those, but I never did. But this was just right up my alley, and it was a Regency story. So, and I had been reading Regency since I was, like, 13. So, you know, it was in my wheelhouse.
Perfect.
So
it was fate.
Yes.
It's really funny though. You sound just like me. It's like you're it's, you know, you write because you feel like you want to get these words out, but the logical side of you is saying, but you can't really make a living at this. I mean, you'll never really finish anything. Come on, go back to work, you know, and all that. And then, and you see other people do it, and you're like, how are they doing that? You know? But then when it clicks that you can actually accomplish these things, then your logical side says, well, maybe we can do this.
Right. Well, and I think, again, I think that doing that led me back to the joy of actually writing it and, you know, like, getting lost in the story. And, like, I always like to say I like having written. I don't like to write. Because, like, actually sitting down and forcing myself to do it is the hard part. Like, once I start, it's fine. But, like, I have to do all kinds of mental tricks to force myself to, like, sit down and actually do it. But once I get there, I'm fine. But it's, like, this daily, you know, 5 minutes of tricking myself into starting to write it.
So do you, I mean, what are some of your tricks that, because, I mean, for people like me who, you know, I mean, when I have free time, I want to just lay down and die because I have 2 kids here. But what are some things that you can do, that you do to motivate yourself to, you know, get your butt in the chair and fingers on the keys?
Well, a lot of it is just bargaining with myself. When I'm drafting a book, I will, like, I try to have routines. So I'll, like, get up around the same time every day. I'll sit down, I'll drink my coffee, eat my breakfast, and I'll give myself, like, an hour to just kind of surf I'll do the New York Times crossword puzzle. And then, you know, at a certain point, it's like, okay, you have to stop goofing around and get started. So, and then I'll do it and I'll say, okay, well, you only have to write X amount of words. So, you know, just write a couple of pages. And, you know, of course, I'll write a couple of pages and, you know, I've still got more to say. So I'll end up, you know, writing more. And once I get past a certain point, then I'll just, you know, keep going. But
it's getting started.
But it takes some, it just takes some finessing to, like, you know, actually make myself do it. Because there are a lot of distractions, especially with the internet and, you know, I've got the cats and the dog, like, constantly wanting to go in and out, you know, and I'll be like, oh, well, they need to, you know, I need to feed the cat, or, you know, I need to go wash those dishes, or, you know, the house is never cleaner when you're on deadline.
Right. Well, that sounds a lot like dealing with children. Yeah, I pretty much have to bargain with them about everything too. So, but I totally understand. So you kind of set yourself a routine when you're on deadline, when you have to write, when you know you have to write.
Right. Yes.
Okay.
I'll just give myself. Oh, go ahead.
No, give yourself breaks.
Do I give myself breaks? Yeah. I mean, it kind of depends. Like, I really do well just writing in, like, one long sprint. Like, so I can, it just depends on the day. But usually if I can get started by 11 and work until 3, then that's a good bit. Like, I'll have gotten a substantial amount done, like maybe 4,000 words.
That's awesome.
Yeah, like
that's a productive day.
The best
yeah.
day I've ever had was like 7,000, but that was crazy. And after you write that much, then your brain is just mush and you can't do anything for the rest of the day.
Are you a plotter? Are you a in between plotter panther? Or?
Yeah, I call myself a planter because I have, like, I'll do kind of a chapter outline where I'll just, like, give myself a little, you know, a couple of sentences for each chapter so that I kind of know where things are going. But I'm one of those people where if I outline too much, I feel like I've already written the book and I have no impetus to write it because I feel like it's already done in my mind. And so it's boring to me. So I have to leave room for my mind to kind of work out stuff while I'm going, because otherwise I'll just get bored and stop.
Do you find that a lot of times after doing that, because this is my problem, when you kind of write, because I do the same thing, just write a like short little summary going to be, and then as I'm writing, like, wait, going somewhere else, do you just go with
it? It depends. Like, I'll, you know, one of the reasons I started doing that was because I used to be a full-on pantser, and I wasted a lot of time that way. And when you're, like, writing for money, it's different when you're just writing, you know, and you have all the time in the world to fiddle with it and stuff. Like, it's fine. But when you got a deadline and you're, you know, you're going to get paid when you turn it in, you know, you obviously are going to you want to be more efficient about it. And so so I had to, like, put in just some goalposts so that I would not waste time that way. But I do, like, if, you know, if something comes up while I'm writing, because, like, I'm a big believer in the subconscious. I'm an instinctive writer, and so I just kind of let the plot go where it's going to go sometimes. And if it's, you know, if it's not too crazy, I'll just let it go where it needs to go. But I try, you know, to get back on track. I don't let it go too far just because, you know, there
yeah.
are dragons.
Yeah.
if you let it go too far.
So tell us why Regency. Was it because you started reading them early and just kind of, you know, that was your favorite era, or why? Sorry, I have to.
Yeah. I read a lot of Agatha Christie when I was a kid, too. Like, probably not the healthiest thing in the world. I read my first Agatha Christie in the third grade, around the same time I read Little Women. And, like, even then, I remember reading it, and there was a murder, and I was like, oh, this is much darker than Nancy Drew. I don't know if I should be reading this. And so, you know, I put Agatha away for a while, but then I came back to it, and I read a lot of British mysteries. So I was already predisposed to, like, England.
Mm-hmm.
And then I picked up Austen when I was in, like, the 7th or 8th grade. I read Austen at the same time that I read A Regency Romance by Marion Chesney. I think it was called Deirdre and Desire. And it was a Regency trad, and I was hooked on them at that point. And I read them at the same time as Austen. So, and I, you know, I didn't really, I was unaware of, you know, book history or whatever. So I kind of thought of them as being on the same continuum. Then of course I realized that, you know, Austen is high literature and Regency is romance. And so, but I read a lot of Regency basically. And then I graduated into historicals. And but my first book was actually a Victorian, and it did not sell.
Mm.
So it's my under the bed book.
I wonder why people are fascinated with Regency. It really is a fascinating time. It just seems like that stays in the mainstream.
Well, I don't know. I think maybe just because we've got the precedent of Georgette Heyer. And so, like, that's kind of kept it. Plus, the Austen resurgence comes back every, you know, 10 years or so.
Right.
So when that happens, then people will get interested in Regency again. And so it's just kind of self-driving.
Mm. Maybe so. I always thought it was close. I love the clothes.
Oh, yeah. That too. Yeah, I don't think anybody can look bad in a Regency gown.
No.
They're very forgiving.
And the manners were something you can tell a story about on their own. I mean, really, the way that they associated with each other, the whole class structure, it was very, you know, it leads to so much to anyway.
Well, I mean, that was something that I was really drawn to, too, especially when I was a teenager, because, you know, again, chaos of the 80s. but, you know, there were rules about things. And I was very drawn to that, I think, probably because my home life was very chaotic and unstructured. So I've appreciated the regimented parts of Regency society. I appreciated that there were certain things you did and did not do. I didn't like the fact that, you know, you got punished for stupid things, like, I don't know,
speaking up to the wrong person,
touching a guy on the arm, or stuff like that. Like, but I like that too, because it gave you something to, like, root against. So,
right.
So I liked that whole structure, and I still like. It really gives me, just when I'm writing, it gives me food for plot, because there are these kind of and we have ridiculous rules and things now. So, I mean, it's kind of a universal.
Yeah. Give them a while, new ones, and throughout the old ones. And,
yeah.
But and it's funny because Regency is almost, it seriously is almost a full reversal of how we interact with each other. You know, it's like almost than what we did now. There's much casual everything now versus that very proper addressing each other and everything else. It's like there's sometimes I just wish that people would treat each other with respect, even if they didn't want to, you know, just so there wouldn't be so much name calling and backbiting and awful things said to each other.
Right.
It was so much better the way that they addressed each other. You know, if they had to insult them, they did it with such class and beautiful words.
Yeah.
And now they just want to call my name.
To it.
Yeah.
Right.
Very good. It makes life much more interesting when somebody can be that quick with their words. So I love that.
Right.
Right. So who would be your, like, all the books you've read or all the movies or anything, who would you say would be your favorite romance, Regency romance hero?
Oh, gosh. I have so many. But my real favorite is kind of unconventional, though a lot of other people love him too, but I will fight them for him. Rupert Carsington from Loretta Chase's Mr. Impossible. He's outwardly, he seems very dumb. And is like he plays on that. The heroine is a scholar, and she assumes that he's like a dumb, brawny idiot. Like he's gorgeous, but he's really stupid. But you know, he shows over the course of the book he's not really stupid. He's not like book smart, but he's not dumb. He just plays up to that image.
Right.
And he's just, he's adorable. He's like cute and funny, and you know, he's strong. He can pick you up and take you places, and you know.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
What
like
more
that.
Do you want in a hero?
He can banter.
He's like pretends to be dumb, but he can banter.
And that surprises her, right? That has to surprise the heroine to say what.
Yeah, exactly.
Those are the good ones. What are some other qualities you like in a good hero? It doesn't have to be Regency.
Well, sense of humor is a big one. I do not have much patience for alphas who, like, do not have a sense of humor, who are, like, super serious and so
the dark brooding ones.
Yeah. I mean, I have loved some dark brooding heroes, do not get me wrong. But the ones that really get to me are like, even if they're like a dark red, like Sebastian St. Vincent, the hero of Lisa Kleypas's Devil in Winter.
Mm-hmm.
He's like a bad dude, but he's hilarious.
Oh, I love
a sense of humor. I mean, you know, a bad dude with a sense of humor is pretty irresistible. So humor is big. I'm actually, most of my heroes, some of them are more alpha-y than others, but for the most part, I tend to write betas. Just because I kind of feel like in real life, alphas get on my nerves. And that's kind of controversial in Romance Landia because alphas are really popular right now, but
yeah.
I just get pissed off when people start telling me what to do. right. I would much rather have somebody who's like, you know, hey, can I help you out with this instead of, hey, I'm going to do this, back off. So Betas are my jam. But again, I have loved many authors. It is not in fiction form.
Well, what do you think? How do you feel like about the anti-hero in the Regency romance world?
It kind of depends on the writer, and like, I'm not somebody that is hard to convince writing, like, I never go into a book assuming that I'm going to hate the hero.
Right.
Or heroine. There are some anti-heroes that I've really liked. I don't know that I have the capacity to write one. But I mean, never say never. I just don't know if I'm that. I don't know.
It's not as easy, I think, to do in certain genres of romance because the stories don't lend to it. But Regency is one of those where there were a lot of underhanded things going on under the scenes, you know, and I know that romantic suspense people can get that easy and paranormal because they can whack them out.
What's funny is that my books are really historical romantic suspense. And I started out writing the Lords of Anarchy series thinking that I was going to do an anti-hero. And, it was going to be this badass curricle driving gang instead of motorcycle gangs. It was, but when it came down to it, I couldn't do it. It's just not in me. I just don't think that way, I think. And like, I can enjoy, reading anti-heroes and watching them and TV shows and stuff. It just is not, it does not come out of my fingers when I start typing.
So what got you to the point in your writing that made you decide that you were going to do it as a full-time gig?
Well, I had gotten to the point where I was making more with my writing than I was at my day job.
Oh, well, that'll do it.
And yeah. And so, I was like, this past year has not been easy because, even though I was making more than the day job, it still like cut my income in half when I, quit the day job. But, putting more energy into the one that makes me more income just made more sense. And physically, I've got some health issues and it was just getting harder for me to do both jobs.
Mm-hmm. I can imagine.
Leave the house and, do the day-to-day, going back, and all that stuff. Whereas if I'm writing, I can kind of make my own schedule. And, if I need to rest, I can rest and whatnot. So,
and be with the cats and the doggy.
Yes, they love it. Now, if I go somewhere during the day and I come back, they're like bitter. Where have you been? You were supposed to be here with us. We wanted to go outside many times, and you did not let us out.
See, you need to write a story about the animals taking over the world. And,
yes.
Turned on all their,
they can be my anti-heroes.
Yeah, that's right. So, when you...
In addition to the St. Martin's book, this is my, I think, 12th book that just came out. And I wrote two novellas outside of that, just self-pub little things.
Those are fun, though. Those are fun to write. you know, shorter version, but not as much pressure. So.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So you sat down and wrote that book, the first book, 6 months, and you said you got an agent pretty fast after that. Did you just start submitting agents as soon as you finished, or how did that process?
I did some revisions and stuff, and I queried. I don't remember how long it was. I think I was rejected by 30 maybe before I got her. It was somewhere around that number. I mean, I queried a ton.
Yeah.
And you just have to, you know, take the approach that it's basically just like shooting an arrow into the air. And, right. You know, if you don't get a response, you can't take it personally. And so, you know.
Keep going.
But,
keep
yeah,
going, right.
And I got her, and she is amazing.
And so, how long
after
you got your agent, how long was it before you were able to sell a book?
That was over a year because I went on submission at this crazy time in the publishing world. There was this I can't remember what year it was. It was maybe 2007. It was right before the financial crisis. And there was this day that they called Black Friday in publishing, where they like laid off a ton of people and the market like contracted suddenly. And so I was out on submission at all these places. And like there were a couple of places who were really interested, but because the market had shifted, they were like, yeah, we just can't do it now. And so, that was, like, pretty devastating. And like I said, that book was a Victorian. And so for the next book, like, Holly and I talked about what I should do next. And, you know, I decided to go back to Regency just because it was, you know, it's a perennial seller. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, it was my first love. Like I like Victorian and I'm interested, and I've actually studied it in grad school. So that was kind of why I did it. But Regency was, you know, the first thing that I really was drawn to. So I decided to come up with like a Regency concept. And I wrote that book, in about 4 or 5 months. And then we did some edits on it and then went on submission.
Awesome.
And I sold in October of 2010.
Okay. So your process went super, super fast, but once you got there, then, I mean, 2010, that was only 6 years ago. So you're about a two a year type of author. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. That's a pretty good turnover. I can't even imagine how hard it was to try to write and have a full-time job at the same time. Are there any tips for people that maybe are starting out in that, you know, they're still working, but they want to write, about how to balance the two?
Yeah. I mean, that was hard, and it was hard especially after I was under contract, because, you know, then you have to turn this book in. I mean, you can't just say, oh, well, work was hard this week, so I'm not doing it.
Right.
So I actually ended up writing a lot on weekends. And because I was an academic librarian, I had a pretty generous amount of vacation time. And so when it got pretty close to a deadline and I needed to buckle down, I could take a few days off and go through there. But you know, I understood that was lucky. Just because I was in academia. Really, like, you just have to be disciplined about it. Like, and that's the hardest thing. Cause I hate being disciplined. But you just have to do it. And so I wrote a lot on weekends. But one thing I don't do is write at night, just because I'm not, I have to give myself a break, and that is my break. So, and I have to watch TV to fill my well.
That's right. Yep. I totally understand that. So tell us, your book just came out on the Ready, Set, Rogue. And tell us just a kind of a brief review of what the story is about.
Well, there are four blue stockings, and they each get this letter from a lady that they've never heard of. And she has left each of them a share in this mansion she has on the south coast of England. And it's got this kick-ass library in it. And they each have, different academic specialties. And so they all travel there. Well, the heroine of the story, Ivy, meets her hero, who happens to be the benefactress's nephew, on the way. And he basically is on his way to the mansion, Beecham House, because he's pissed off that these four strangers have inherited his aunt's house where he, hung out when he was a kid, and it was his haven, and he's mad. So, but when they get there, she gets another letter that's been left for her specifically by the aunt that tells her that she was actually murdered, and that she is going to have to work with the nephew to find out who killed her. That is her mission, and that is her, in exchange for her inheriting part of this mansion, she has to do that for her. So there's mystery, there's banter, there's romance, there's daring do, everything I like in a Regency. I like some mystery, I like some romance, I like some banter, I like kissing, sexy times,
little danger,
secret passageways. Yeah.
This one is is this one part of a series? I'm trying to see if, is this the first one in the Studies in Scandal?
Yes. Okay. It's the first one. It's going to be a quartet. Maybe more. We'll see after these first four come out, but I'm doing each of the blue stockings. So,
oh, okay.
For right
now. That'll be neat. So you have another one coming out in June.
Yes. And that will be so far in the reviews, readers, they like the hero and heroine, but they really love the heroine of the second book. So I'm terrified that they're not going to love her when her book comes out. So I've set myself a high bar. I'm kind of afraid, but she is very forthright, shall we say. She does not have much of a filter between her brain and her mouth.
No.
So
which wasn't very ladylike during that time period, so that's interesting.
No. She's pretty scandalous.
Well, that'll be interesting. And on beyond this quartet, do you have plans for other projects?
Well, I actually am working on a super secret project with my agent right now that we're getting ready to put on submission, in a different genre. I mean, it's still romance, but it's straight romantic suspense. So, we'll see what happens. 'Cause I really enjoy the suspense part a lot, so I thought I would do something in contemporary.
How different was it for you to sit down and write in that world versus being in the Regency period? Was it a big jump?
It was it was kind of freeing just because I could use modernisms and not like worry about having to go check in the OED to see if it had been said at that point. So that part of it was really nice, and I could use like modern creative cursing and stuff like that. So but it's different too, just because I feel like the suspense and romantic suspense, like straight contemporary romantic suspense, has to be more I don't know, it's just it's a little grittier, I think, mm-hmm. than historical.
Yeah, I agree.
So but once I started, it was fun. We'll see how long that lasts, but for right now it's fun.
We need to tell everybody where they can find your books. I know that if you go to your website, which is Amanda Collins, that's Tools and Collins .com, that you can get to all the buy links there for Ready Set Rogue, and there's a pre-order already up for the next one, Duke with Benefits.
Yeah.
So you can get all there. And the social media links are there as well. So you have a Goodreads page, a Facebook page, Pinterest, Twitter, and Google Plus. So she's covered. Yes. And you have a newsletter on your website too. Is that correct?
Yes, there is a sign up for the newsletter on my website. I moderate a group on Goodreads that is the Eloisa James Julia Quinn fan group. That may not even be the exact name of the group, so I shouldn't have said anything, but it's something like that. No, I think it's Fans of Eloisa James and Julia Quinn. And so, we do like weekly readings and stuff like that if you want to come talk about what you read.
And your newsletter, is that like the best place to get the updates on everything for you?
Yes. Or my Facebook page. Generally, I only try to send newsletters when I have something coming out, just because I don't like to, I don't want to spam people. But if you want like more up-to-date information about me, generally I'll post it on the Facebook page. Twitter, Instagram is more like pictures of the cats and the dog.
That's okay too. People like
I do those on Facebook too. Yeah.
So that's what we go on. That's what we go on social media for, is kitty and puppy pictures.
Yes. Well, I give that in spades. So if you were into that.
I think all readers have that at this pretty much at heart together. So, yeah.
Yes.
It'll make sense.
Yeah. It's hard to resist.
Okay. Well, I really am glad we got to talk and talk about our librarian sisterhood, and that you were able to come on the show. Thanks so much for being a part.
Well, I'm just so thrilled to have been here. I've heard about Author Talk Radio for a long time, and I was always like, one day I would like to be on one of those shows. And now I am, I can check it off my bucket list.
That's awesome. I love being people's bucket list. That's great. And best of luck to you with the super secret project. I think that's really cool. And with the rest of your Studies in Scandal series.
Thank you so much. I enjoy being on. It's always fun to talk to a fellow librarian. Feels my book pain.
There you go. All right. Well, you have a great evening, and you can check her out on amandacons.com when all her social media links are there. Books are available at all your major retail outletters. Listen to that. Great English. I'm glad I didn't get my English.
Hey, we all do it.
That's right. And Ready, Set, Rogue available. It came out on the 3rd. So grab it up, people, and have a great evening, Amanda. Thanks for being on.
Thank you.
All right, have a good one. And you guys can hear me every Thursday night here on the Library
Eastern at 9 p.m. almost Central Eastern Time. This broadcast has been recorded and will be available as a podcast from the Authors on the Air website, SoundCloud, and iTunes. Authors on the Air Global Radio Network can be online at www.authorsontheair.com. And you can find us just about everywhere you can think of in the social media universe. This is Tabitha Pope, your host of The Librarian, saying sweet dreams and see you next week.